The National Broadcasting Company presents Lives of Great Men, a new series on great leaders in human progress, presented by Dr. Edward Howard Griggs, distinguished lecturer, critic, and author of Blossomed Hours and many other books. In his talks, Dr. Griggs is building a story of civilization based on outstanding characters through the ages and how each one influences his own and future times. This evening, Dr. Griggs will discuss G.K. Chesterton, a modern man of letters. We present Dr. Edward Howard Griggs.
My friends, the first and strongest impression Chesterton makes upon us is of a warm, buoyant, life-loving character, and that quality determined his whole career as essayist, poet, novelist, and public speaker. His family background was of that old, prosperous, self-respecting middle class in England, deferential toward the aristocracy, but with no dream of entering it, and quite satisfied with its superiority to the class below. In his pungent style, Chesterton describes it as the class in which nobody was any more likely to drop an H than to pick up a title. He tells of screaming in early childhood for a hat hanging on a peg, and finally exclaiming, "If you don't give it me, I'll say at." That, the child felt, would bowl over his relatives for miles around. Thus the middle class was well educated. Chesterton's father was deeply read in English literature and early initiated his son in that field. His father conducted a modest but successful real estate business, which had been carried on with universal respect by his ancestors for several generations. The word respectable, Chesterton says, now given derogatory meaning, has been replaced by the word adventure in application to business, and he thinks that marks the contrast of the Victorian epoch with our plutocratic commercialism. His mother's family had a French surname, with a tradition that it came from a French soldier of the Revolutionary Wars who had remained in England. On the other side, his mother was descended from the Keiths of Aberdeen, and that Scotch element in his ancestry took romantic hold of Chesterton's boyish mind, as it does with all who have that background. Of his maternal grandfather, he says, he had been one of the old Wesleyan lay preachers and was thus involved in public controversy, a characteristic which had descended to his grandchild. He was also one of the leaders of the early teetotal movement, a characteristic which has not. He quotes two sayings of this grandfather, both of which characterize Chesterton's own permanent view of life. Once when his sons were ridiculing convention, he said, "Ah, they talk a lot about fashion, but fashion is civilization." On another occasion, when the younger generation was lightly tossing about the pessimism of youth, the old man said, "I should thank God for my creation if I knew I was a lost soul." His grandfather's last statement expresses what Chesterton calls, toward the close of his autobiography, the chief idea of my life. That is, the idea of taking things with gratitude and not taking things for granted. The aim of life is appreciation. There is no sense in not appreciating things, and there is no sense in having more of them if you have less appreciation of them. Both the happy hedonists and the unhappy pessimists were not in touch with this particular notion of having a great deal of gratitude, even for a very little good. That is the central idea running through Chesterton's whole life, which he found completely realized only in the Mother Church of Christendom, explaining to him why the wide wandering ship of his life found final port in that harbor. He was born in 1874 in Kensington, and baptized in the Anglican Church of St. George opposite the large waterworks tower. That tower, which caught his child imagination, was to figure in one of his humorous, allegorical stories later on. His earliest memory, he tells us, was of a toy theater made by his father, who had many hobbies to round out his workaday life. It contained a man with a golden key crossing a bridge to a castle, a symbol Chesterton completes as the god with the golden key in the concluding chapter of his life story. With his usual stimulating paradox, Chesterton argues that modern educators are wrong in regarding the child as living in a world of make-believe. He holds the child world to be the one world of absolute clarity and reality. It is the man who has his head in the clouds. Thus he insists he was all there in childhood, and his life's conclusion after many wanderings was a return to that reality. Also, he believes educators are wrong in holding that children dislike stories with a didactic Sanford and Merton moral, He insists they do like them, and that it is right that they should. Chesterton's school days at St. Paul's in Hammersmith are narrated in a chapter characteristically entitled, How to Become a Dunce. Nevertheless, while the chief feeling among his associates was shame at displaying any ability, he won a prize for a poem, learned much from his comrades, and got more equipment for life than he acknowledges or perhaps recognized. While his fellows went to college, he was transferred to the Slade Art School with the hope that he would become a painter. Though showing some ability in that field, it was not to be his career, as his literary ability and interest early asserted itself. Meantime, he was going through all the spiritual doubts and pessimistic questioning characteristic of the time when science was undermining so many foundations of belief. He dabbled in spiritualism for a time, but found no answer there. His makeshift solution was that mere existence was extraordinary enough to be exciting. Anything was magnificent compared to nothing. He came out of the period of doubt, resolved to write against the then popular pessimists. In that mood, his early poems were written and published with his father's help in the volume The Wild Night. It was favorably reviewed, giving him as poet his first literary recognition. Then his long review of a book on Stevenson brought the friendship of lovers of that master, and the crown came when the Macmillan firm asked him to write a book on Browning for the English Men of Letters series. He says whimsically that his book was on love, liberty, and poetry, with occasional references to Browning, but it was well received. He was thus launched as Man of Letters before he became controversial journalist. Meantime, his interest in political affairs was awakening, and he was groping toward a local type of patriotism, reluctantly calling himself a socialist because he could not be an imperialist. He believed in the right of small groups and peoples to enjoy their liberties without being subject to the control of greedy empires. These ideas were clarified by the breaking out of the South African War, in which Chesterton's sympathies were wholly with the Boers, but equally opposed to the pacifists. It was through his attitude on the Boer War that he came to know Hilaire Belloc, who held similar views, and the closest friendship of Chesterton's life was formed. His growing interest in political affairs took him into the field of journalism with a series of articles in the Speaker. Then came the purchase of the Daily News by the pro-Boer liberals, and Chesterton wrote a weekly article for that paper through many years. Later, his brother Cecil founded the Eyewitness, subsequently called the New Witness, to expose and attack political corruption, as in the Marconi case and the sale of peerages. Chesterton wrote for it constantly and edited it while his brother was fighting in France and after Cecil's death in the World War. With his spirit of local patriotism, Chesterton had vivid sympathy for Irish nationalism. He says, "It is to me a considerable satisfaction to think that I've always felt it the first duty of a real English patriot to sympathize with the passionate patriotism of Ireland, that I expressed it through the worst times of her tragedy, and have not lost it in her triumph." Chesterton thinks his success in journalism was due to the fact that he never wrote anything suitable to any of the papers for which he was writing. He means that for various political papers, he was writing charming literary and humorous essays and stories, which the readers found a delightful relief from the conventional material furnished them. He was thus distinctly the man of letters working as journalist. This is evidenced by the successful publication in book form of numerous volumes of his articles under such titles as All Things Considered, Generally Speaking, Come to Think of It. Besides the mass of such work, he wrote biographies portraying Dickens, Stevenson, and St. Francis. His collected poems make a large volume, including a saga of King Alfred and the stirring war poem, The Ballad of St. Barbara. While he did not achieve any great poem, his verse is effective, often humorous or sarcastic, and expresses a wide range of emotion. His production covered novels and detective stories, the best being the Father Brown books, a successful play, and religious writings such as Orthodoxy. An amazing range of work it is. He found time withal for public lecturing, including successful trips to the United States. Chesterton's style is pungent, effective, often scintillating, but it remained journalistic, using many of the careless inaccuracies more characteristic of American than of British journalism. His graver fault is a love of paradox and a yielding to the lure of the epigram. Whole truths never scintillate. The more limited a half-truth is, the easier is it to polish its facets and make them shine brilliantly. This is accentuated in Chesterton because he was temperamentally a controversialist. Thus, he is often clever in scintillating rather than sound in balanced wisdom. He stimulates thinking, at times to the point of rejecting his conclusion. Nevertheless, his spirit is always so genial and human that one welcomes the stimulation and forgives the limitation. It is significant that the late written autobiography has less of paradox than the volumes of essays, particularly those from the first half of his career. This shows his serious, constructive purpose in telling his life story, especially to reveal the meaning and the development of his faith with the concluding acceptance of the Mother Church of Christendom. Chesterton is modest in estimating his own work. He says, "My real judgment of my own work is that I have spoiled a number of jolly good ideas in my time. It was not the superficial or silly or jolly part of me that made me a journalist. On the contrary, it is such part as I have in what is serious or even solemn. In short, I could not be a novelist because I like to see ideas or notions wrestling naked, as it were, and not dressed up in a masquerade as men and women. But I could be a journalist because I could not help being a controversialist." His religious development is the heart of Chesterton's life story. The Victorian period in which he grew up experienced the breakdown of faith resulting from the discoveries in science. He describes the world about him as agnostic in religion and pessimistic toward life. To both of these attitudes, he was opposed temperamentally and by instinctive faith. The groping for solutions in theosophy, spiritualism, and other cults disgusted him as much as the despairing unbelief. Long before his final solution, he was feeling his way toward it in such books as Heretics and Orthodoxy. He tells of coming upon the sentence in the Common Catechism, "The two sins against hope are presumption and despair." He came to see presumption as the sin of the self-styled optimist, despair as that of the pessimist, while for him the solution lay in accepting the teaching of the only church old enough to be antiquated. Interesting that it was Father O'Connor, upon whom with fictional transformations he based the Father Brown stories, who received him into the Roman Catholic Communion in 1922. The closing tender passage of the autobiography returns to the toy theater dream of his childhood. "There starts up again before me, standing sharp and clear as of old, the figure of a man who crosses a bridge and who carries a key. As I saw him when I first looked into fairyland through the window of my father's peep show. But I know that he who is called Pontifex, the builder of the bridge, is also called Clavager, the bearer of the key, and that such keys were given him to bind and loose when he was a poor fisher in a far province beside a small and almost secret sea." Throughout Chesterton's life story and from all his writings, the impression is given of a warmly human, most lovable man, strong in his opinions, sometimes prejudiced, but always seeking truth, and with a faith in life which the negations of his time could not destroy. He was a tenacious friend, a jovial comrade, with a boyish exuberance of merriment. He fought for true liberty and the social justice that preserves it, courageously standing for the unpopular side when his convictions placed him there. He enjoyed life deeply and lived it eagerly till the curtain fell in 1936.
G.K. Chesterton, a modern man of letters, has been the subject of another program in the series entitled Lives of Great Men, presented by Dr. Edward Howard Griggs, distinguished lecturer, critic, and author. Next week, Dr. Griggs will speak on Walt Whitman, poet of democracy. Copies of tonight's discussion of Chesterton may be obtained by addressing the National Broadcasting Company in Radio City, New York, or the station to which you are listening. This is the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.